This is The Faith Debate, a theological roundtable grab bag with the mix master as the master of ceremonies and the good doctor. Is there a doctor in the house?
Is an apocalypse on the horizon? How's that for a question for you this morning?
The Faith Debate is on the World Wide Web at WFMD.com, keyword faith, sponsored by High Low Auto Sales and Tire Pros of Frederick.
Tonight, you will see a rare lunar event, the super blood moon combined with a lunar eclipse. It has some people preparing for the end of the world as we know it.
In this corner, weighing in with a Master of Divinity from Reformed Theological Seminary, Mix Master Troy Skinner. In this corner, weighing in with a PhD from Westminster Theological Seminary, the good doctor, Jace Broadhurst.
We have a combination of a supermoon and a lunar eclipse.
For some, it's a sign of something much more. An impending apocalypse. The end of the world as we know it.
I've seen people come in and leave with a trailer full of food in the last week or two.
The fear so widespread, the church felt the need to issue a statement telling its 15 million followers to prepare for life's ups and downs, but not panic about an imminent end of the world.
I still think it's a relatively small minority of members of the church who are attracted to this idea.
Perhaps just the latest in a series of Judgment Day predictions. There was December 21st, 2012, the so-called end of the Mayan calendar.
I'm very scared of the end of the world.
Eternal life.
And the rapture in 2011.
May 21 will be the day of judgment.
So far, the dates have come and gone. As for the blood moon, scientists say we won't see another one for another 18 years. Perhaps long after we've survived a few more doomsdays.
When will Jesus return? What are the indicators? Will he return at all? How do we know? Has he already returned? If so, in what sense? And what do all of these questions mean for you? If Jesus is not coming again, what does this say about God, faith, the church, society as a whole? If he is returning but is yet to come, what does this say about how I should live my life and prepare? If he's already returned, what does this say about the world we now live in? What's next? It's a pretty deep theological and philosophical question, so to help figure this all out, we've gathered together three very shallow individuals to chat about it. Well, I'm shallow anyway. I'll let Jace speak for himself.
Yeah, and, all right. I'm in. Yeah.
And we'll find out by the end of all of this which end of the pool claims our guest, a blogger and podcaster holding a Master of Divinity degree, I believe, right? Is that correct?
That's right.
From Reformed Theological Seminary. His podcast is called Rethinking Revelation, Travis Finley. So last week we didn't have time for you to jump in and because you couldn't possibly say in 10 seconds what you need to say. So the floor is going to be yours, and then Jason and I will bounce off of that.
Okay, so I talked a little bit about the transition that I took from where I started out as a Christian and what happened in the turn of the century with that Sunday school class. And so the perspective that this gentleman brought to our church with preterism was considered heretical. That is, it's contrary to historic Christianity, and it denies major, major facets of what we hold in terms of understanding what the Bible teaches. So my problem became agreeing with
Heresy.
With heresy.
Yeah.
And thinking, okay, I am not Martin Luther, and yet I feel as though my conscience is being bound by the scriptures. My tradition says this is what the scriptures teach. I read the scriptures and I don't read that. What do I do? How do I respond to this? How does this? So as I continued in my studies, I began to think, okay, I believe that the fulfillment of the New Testament is complete. If that's the case, how can I maintain the label of orthodox and not heretic? And this goes back to what I said at the very beginning in terms of communication. What you think you understand by these terms affects how you hear what I say. And if we are not using the same language, if you are interpreting the Bible a certain way, and I'm interpreting the Bible a certain way, the conflict comes with understanding each other. And this goes for any theological sure. discussion. Yeah. I mean, the days of creation, infant baptism, you know, whatever. You know, it's all a matter of this is what I'm saying, or I hear you saying this and whatnot. But
probably this is a big difference because, you know, if we're disagreeing about whether the days of creation are literal 24-hour days or if an infant can be baptized or only a professing believer can be baptized, those have always at least been couched as intramural disagreements between believers. But if you say something like Jesus isn't coming, because I guess you're going to say he's already come, that's like, whoa, wait a minute. So that's so this is a bigger question than some of the other ones, right? Or have we just made a bigger question of this than the other ones?
Okay. It goes back. I sit here and I think all the time, how am I going to be able to say what I want to say in a way that makes sense and causes someone simply to want to consider what I'm saying? So I try so many different ways of turning the prism so that I can come at it from a different angle. If we look at early church history and we say, look, this is the early church fathers believed this or whatever, that's fine. They interpreted the Bible a certain way. How many interpretations are there? Lots, right?
There are people.
Lots. But there are a lot of things that the early church fathers believed that we would disagree with. I think it was Irenaeus maybe that believed that Jesus was 50 years old when he died. Okay? So whatever. There's so many that I don't know. The thing that I've come out of in from seminary is a more loose expectation and demand for people. I've changed so much in the way that I've thought about things. Whether or not it's baptism or 7 days of creation or eschatology. And the way that I've changed has enabled me not to have an expectation on you that you've got – I don't have it all nailed down. I don't have A, B, C, D all the way down the line.
But let me ask how things flow, like some of the implications of your thinking now and how you process through that. So if Jesus is not coming – but he promised to come again. That means he's, in your view, you've settled on he's already come. And I'm assuming that's in AD 70 with the destruction
right.
of the temple.
Yeah.
Probably judgment on Jerusalem and on the old system of Judaism and Israel.
That's right. Yeah.
So what does that mean starting AD 71 forward for the rest of us still here? What does that mean to you?
When I talk to Granny Smith, and that's my general reference to any Christian, Grandpa Joe and Granny Smith.
Are you an ageist?
They're just the ones that you love. They're just so you just gotta love them. You just gotta love them. You know, they just say they just want to love Jesus and they just read their Bible. And so my initial response is nothing changes. Do everything the same. Live your life the way you live it right now. And do everything the same. Continue on. That comes from my understanding of the nature of the kingdom, which is post-millennial. But I think that's jumping ahead. Let me go back to try to substantiate some things in terms of where I'm at in biblical interpretation. It's a well-known fact that two prominent theologians and philosophers in the 20th century believed the same thing about Jesus with different responses. Both of these gentlemen believed that Jesus was wrong when he said that he was coming back because certain things didn't happen. Bertrand Russell wrote an essay, Why I'm Not a Christian. His main argument stems from Matthew 24, because Jesus said that within a generation, the sun and the moon and the stars were going to fall from the sky.
Right.
Guess what?
They did not.
2,000 years later, we're still here. Bertrand Russell says Jesus was wrong. That's why I'm not a Christian. A Christian by the name of C.S. Lewis said the same thing. This is the most embarrassing text in the Bible because Jesus was wrong. But I'm a Christian. Okay. I don't know what I'm going to say to anyone that's going to be the seed that sparks their thought. But to me, that was profound.
Let me turn to Jace for a second. Do you think Jesus is wrong?
No.
Okay.
Back to Travis.
Yeah. Good answer. I'm gonna analyze both men and Albert Schweitzer and all of what happened in the 19th and 20th century with eschatology, because it's all related. There's a difference between what the Bible says and what the Bible means by what it says. That's interpretation. Everybody interprets the Bible. When Jesus says that after the tribulation in those days, the sun will grow dark, the moon will turn blood red, and the stars of the heavens will fall, what does he mean? That's what he said, but what does he mean? Bertrand Russell and C.S. Lewis thought he meant the physical cosmos. If that's what he meant, then yeah, he was wrong. Because that didn't happen within the generation. But then again, if we want to make sure, and so C.S. Lewis and Albert Schweitzer, they wanted to defend Christ. They wanted to come to his defense and say, okay, he can't be wrong. We don't believe that the Messiah can be wrong. So what does he mean? And then you get the dispensational approach, which is, I think, pretty much characterized by John MacArthur, where generation gets redefined. And so you have to then – this is what the text says, but this didn't happen. So then what does this mean?
In fairness, though, I think that there are recurring examples in Scripture where there's an unfolding where things don't happen in exactly the sequence or the time that's expected. I mean, that was the case with Jesus as he walked the earth. The Jews of the time were expecting a deliverer from Roman oppression, and they didn't get that. So were all those prophecies totally, completely misunderstood? Were those prophets in the Old Testament
wrong?
Yes,
those Jews were wrong, okay? The book of Daniel, Jeremiah.
So couldn't C.S. Lewis and Bertrand Russell be wrong?
No, they are wrong. C.S. Lewis and Bertrand Russell are wrong because they think what Jesus said was this when what he meant was that. So they are misinterpreting his words about the sun and the moon and the stars.
Well, part of what Jesus came when he was walking the earth, he does say is happening now. When he,
right, the kingdom
up,
of God is at hand.
And then
yeah.
he sits
right.
down and says,
yep.
bang,
yep.
it's here.
Right.
So there's part right. of it was then and there,
yeah.
and yet some of it was still in the future distant. So that's
only I would say this to interrupt you, only because there was another day ahead of Jesus and then another day ahead. It's not a mortar that gets lobbed up into the air, and when it comes down, it comes down. We don't know when these things are going to happen, but whatever. But you're right to highlight the fact that Christ comes on the scene,
mm-hmm.
and what I'm going to say is that's the expectation of the prophets of the latter days. And Jay said this at the beginning. I think he mentioned something about the last days, and they thought that Paul said something, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, they were in the last days. Okay, we have to pay attention to those terminologies because— what happens is G.K. Beale redefines the last days. It's not this terminal event. Beale says stuff that drives me nuts. He says stuff, it appears as though Isaiah thought that these things were going to happen in a single event. Yeah, that's right. That's right. But then Beale goes on to redefine and reinterpret the New Testament to accommodate for what I think is a false paradigm, the already not yet. The already not yet, in my opinion, if we want to be technical, lasted for 40 years. Jesus comes on the scene, and for 40 years there's an already not yet of the overlap of this age that Paul was in and the age to come, that which followed Paul. There's an overlap.
Now, you're saying that because your view would hold that Jesus did come back in AD 70, so that would be the end of the overlap of the age. But
that's
for those
correct.
Who don't believe he
that's
came
correct.
Back in AD 70, then that 40 years would be continuing on until now, correct?
Correct, right.
Right.
Okay, so then that goes back into our definition of terms. So let me say with
Well, let me reset real quick. This is the Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio, 930 WFMD. I'm Troy Skinner. Our guest is Travis Finley. He is a blogger and a podcaster. He has a podcast called Rethinking Revelation. And Dr. Jace Broadhurst from Poolsville Baptist Church, he's the pastor there, and he's been relatively quiet so far.
I'm trying to
morning.
Listen and learn because I feel like you're almost about to say things. Like, we're almost there, but you're not actually – like. So if it's not the moon falling out of the sky, star, whatever, you know, turning to blood, et cetera, what is that? And I'm sure you're going to say, I mean, and I recognize this, these are stock phrases for the end of time, for the end of whatever they understand to be time, that particular time. It's that they're not literal events taking place, so that therefore all these people are wrong. So what is it referring to? It's referring to the destruction of Jerusalem?
We can't do this justice. We just can't.
Yeah, but now you only got 10 minutes or something
right,
like that.
So I know.
You
gotta right.
Plow through, dude.
Okay, let me say it this way, okay? The Bible is written in three different languages, Hebrew, Aramaic, and Greek. That's only three quarters true.
You left out Old King James English, by the way.
Yeah, right. I'll bring that up in a second, maybe. That's only three quarters true. It's not fully true. There's another quarter that has to be understood. There is a fourth language that the Bible utilizes that spans all three of those different categories of Hebrew, Aramaic, and Greek. And that is the language of symbol.
Like typology and that sort of thing?
Of type.
Yeah,
okay. Of figure, okay? That language is the queen of the Bible because the Bible uses it from Genesis to Revelation. We say things like this all the time, but we don't think about the ramifications and how deep it really is. We say things like, you better not read the New Testament until you've read the Old. Yeah, but that's huge. 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 Okay? So that if I read the Bible, if I'm a new Christian and I'm given the Bible and I say, where should I start? Well, I just start reading the book of John. Okay, I'm going to start reading the book of John. There are categories and theological concepts and paradigms that John uses and employs that the normal reader who's never read the Bible before will not understand. Now, he can read, for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son. He can read those words.
Well, that's true of starting anywhere. It's a cohesive whole.
True, true. Yeah, there is a context. But I want to try to highlight the profundity of saying what you're saying. Don't read the Bible or don't read the New Testament until you've read the Old. I would say don't read the New Testament at all. Read the Old. Just stay there for 10, 20 years.
Last week, Jesus isn't coming back. Yeah. And this week, don't read the New Testament at all.
Okay.
Bang.
Just to make that point. So my point to answer Jesus' question about, okay, so when Jesus says the sun and the moon and the stars are going to be destroyed, what does that mean? I'm going to suggest that the previous revelation, that is from Genesis to Malachi, uses and employs that language so that that's what Jesus is doing. See, coming from where I came, there was a huge, Marcionism is rampant in the church. Marcionism, right, is the Old Testament revealed this God, the New Testament reveals this God. And there's this sharp demarcation and division. That, even though it's not that specific, that mentality still exists in the Christian church. Most people—
Not in this room though, right?
Right. Or okay. We're the anomalies. Most people spend a lot of their time in the New Testament, reading the New Testament, because they just want to know about Jesus. They just want to know about Jesus. And I'm not saying that's wrong, but that's not the best approach.
All right. So let me get you back to the main thing. So because nothing you've said bothers me even a little bit.
Okay.
So if you're going to read Revelation and you're going to read about the tree of life on the side of the river and you don't understand what Ezekiel is talking about with the tree of life that brings healing to the nation or something, then you don't know what you're talking about, right? You can't read Revelation without Ezekiel. You have to know the language that the New Testament is using.
Let me say this. Let me jump in because time is so short.
Right.
I'm not trying to be rude.
No, that's what I'm trying to get you
to
do.
Okay. To follow your example, but changing the metaphor, when John says, I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the former heavens and the former earth passed away, and I saw a city coming down out of heaven, right? All that image.
Yep.
Where did John get his idea of the new heavens and the new earth? He got it from Isaiah 65. Where did Isaiah get his idea? We have to keep peeling the onion back. When people see in John 21, behold, I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the former heavens and the former earth have passed away, and there was no sea, and they think physical cosmos, that's not what John was talking about. I will right now take a bullet for that. John was not talking about the physical cosmos. Where did he get his idea? Isaiah 65. We look at Isaiah 65. We read Isaiah 65. If you were, I would think, responsible and just reading literature, and this goes into my assessment and possibly yours as well, the ramifications of our presuppositions, those things that we take for granted, those things that we assume right off the bat, color the way that we read the Bible so that we don't even read the Bible because we think we already know what it means. So if I believe in Revelation 21 that John is talking about the physical heavens and the physical earth, and then I look up cross-references in my handy-dandy Bible right there, and it says, oh, look up 2 Peter 3. And I look up 2 Peter 3, and I see the heavens are going to disappear in a roar, and the elements are going to burn with fire in an atomic blast. And I'm thinking physical cosmos. I'm maintaining a consistent hermeneutic. They're both talking about the same thing. I agree they're both talking about the same thing, but they're not talking about the physical cosmos. Right. So let's go back. Where did these two guys get this idea? We go back to Isaiah 65. In Isaiah 65, we see that God says, behold, I create a new heaven and a new earth. Well, if we stop there and we just think physical, okay, that's all consistent. Isaiah 65, 2 Peter 3, Revelation 21. But it's just basic to me. Do you know what the next verse says? Behold, I create a new heaven and a new earth. Basic parallelism. The next verse says, behold, I create Jerusalem. That right there tells you what the new heavens and the new earth is. He just said it. Behold, I create a new heavens and a new earth. Behold, I'm recreating my people.
Right. Now we're getting somewhere. All right. I gotcha.
And we're getting somewhere just in time for us to be wrapping up this episode. So you got to hold your train of thought for a whole week.
Got to come back next week.
Can hang out for a whole week. You can do it. I have faith in you. Is it okay for me to say I have faith in you?
I think so.
Okay. Just making sure what the rules are. The one who says I can say I have faith in him is Jace Broadhurst. So if you have a problem with that, go visit Poolsville Baptist Church. He's the pastor there. Our guest this week is Travis Finley, the host of a podcast called Rethinking Revelation. He's also an active blogger online. Thank to our sponsors, Hilo Auto Sales and Tire Pros of Frederick. And thank you, listener, for tuning in to The Faith Debate, heard every Sunday, 9 a.m. on 930 WFMD. Till next week, God bless.